Okay, the sutta we are going to, I'm going to share tonight is the simile of the snake, Alagadupama Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 22. Okay. So this sutta is expounded by the Buddha in Savatthi, Jeta's Grove, Anatta Pindika's Park. Now, on that occasion, a pernicious view had arisen in a bhikkhu named Aritta, formerly of the vulture killers, thus, as I understand the Dharma taught by the Blessed One, those things called obstructions by the Blessed One are not able to obstruct one who engages in him, in them. So this, those things called obstructions here refer to sensual pleasures, especially sexual pleasures, sexual intercourse, according to commentary. It's referring to sexual intercourse. So this monk called Aritta, he holds the wrong view. He says the monk can engage in sexual intercourse, and by engaging in sexual intercourse, there's no harm. So this wrong view arises in this monk called Aritta's mind. And many monks, having heard about this, desiring to detach him from that pernicious view, and pressed and questioned and cross-questioned him. Thus, friend Aritta, do not say so. Do not misrepresent the Blessed One. It's not good to misrepresent the Blessed One. The Blessed One would not speak thus. For in many discourses, the Blessed One has stated how obstructive things are obstructions, and how they are able to obstruct one who engages in them. The Blessed One has stated how sensual pleasures provide little gratification, much suffering, and much despair, and how great is the danger in them. With the simile of the skeleton, with the simile of the piece of meat, with the simile of the grass torch, with the simile of the pit of coals. So Buddha gave many simile to show the danger of indulging in sensual pleasures. All this simile you can find in Majjhima Nikaya 54, Potaliya Sutta. Here I'd like to share a few simile given by the Buddha. For example, Buddha said, the sensual pleasures is like a skeleton. So in Potaliya Sutta, Buddha gives the simile. He says, suppose a dog overcome by hunger and weakness was waiting by a butcher's shop. Then a skilled butcher would cut out a skeleton of meatless bones smeared with blood and throw it to the dog. What do you think, householder? Would that dog get rid of his hunger and weakness by biting such a skeleton of meatless bones smeared with blood? So how do you think? Yes or no? Of course no. Why? So they answer, no, venerable sir. Why is that? Because that skeleton consists only of meatless bone, no meat, so cannot fit the hunger. Meatless bones smeared with blood. Eventually, that dog would reap weariness despair and disappointment. So this his lust, his craving for food is not fulfilled. So finally, the dog will reap despair. So this simile is to show that sensual desire finally reap or give rise to despair and disappointment, because the craving cannot be satiated, cannot be fulfilled. This is called simile of the skeleton. Then another simile Buddha gives is a piece of meat. The sensual pleasures is compared to a piece of meat. And Buddha gives a simile. Suppose a vulture, suppose a crow seized a piece of meat and flew away, and then many vultures flew up and pecked and clawed it. What do you think, householder? If that crow does not quickly let go of that piece of meat, wouldn't it incur death or deadly suffering because of that? Yes or no? Yes. If that crow does not quickly let go of that piece of meat, other vultures will attack him. Will attack him, then he will suffer deadly. Therefore, he has to let go. So without satisfying his craving, he has to let go again. So the sensual pleasures incurred suffering. Incur suffering and invite the attack, the jealousy, also the attack from other people. And the third simile Buddha gives is blazing grass torch. He gives the example, householder. Suppose a man took a blazing grass torch and went against the wind. What do you think, householder? If that man does not quickly let go of that blazing grass torch, would that blazing grass torch burn his hand or his arm or some other part of his body, so that he might incur death or deadly suffering because of that? Yes or no? Yes. So these are the danger in enjoying sensual pleasures. And the rest of simile, if you want to know in more detail, you can go to Majjhima Nikaya 54, Pottaliya Sutta. Buddha give about 7 or 8 similes to show how dangerous is to indulge in sensual pleasures. So the monks try to detach this arita who hold the wrong view by giving all this simile given by the Buddha. And yet, although pressed and questioned and cross-questioned by the monk in this way, the bhikkhu arita, formerly of the vulture killers, still obstinately adhered to that pernicious view and continued to insist upon it. He didn't want to give up his view, his wrong view. And since the bhikkhus were unable to detach him from that pernicious view, they have to report to the Buddha. And the Buddha summoned Arita Bhikkhu. So when Arita Bhikkhu came to the Buddha, Buddha asked him, I was told that you hold the wrong view. Is it true or not? Arita said yes. Then the Buddha started to admonish him. He said, misguided man. Misguided man. So, to whom have you ever known me to teach the Dharma in that way? Misguided man, in many discourses have I not stated how obstructive things are obstructions, and how they are able to obstruct who engages in them. I have stated how sensual pleasures provide little gratification, much suffering, and much despair, and how great is the danger in them. With the simile of the skeleton, with the simile of the piece of meat, with the simile of the grass, torch, and so on. And I have stated how sensual pleasures provide little gratification, much suffering, and much despair, and how great is the danger in them. But you, misguided men, have misrepresented us by your wrong grasp and injured yourself and stored up much demerit. This is a very important sentence. When a person wrongly grasp the Dhamma, wrongly mispresent, misinterpret or misrepresent the Dhamma, then he will follow the view that he grasps. Then he will follow the wrong path and thinking is the correct path. Therefore, this will lead him to a long, long time suffering. Just like Arita, if he thinks that enjoying in sexual intercourse, because he's a monk, monk is not allowed to have sexual intercourse with women. So if he thinks that there's no fault to indulge in sexual intercourse, then he will follow. He will follow what he thinks is correct. Then when he follow, enjoy in more sensual pleasures, more lust will arise in him, and this lust will become the obstruction to him to make further progress. Not only that, he become more and more lustful, so he will be far away from the Dharma. Therefore, Buddha said, if you wrongly grasp the Dharma, then you hurt yourself and store up much demerit. Then the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhus, what do you think? Has the bhikkhu Arita, formerly of the vulture killers, kindled even a spark of wisdom in this Dharma and discipline? How could he be? How could he, Venerable Sir? No, Venerable Sir. When this was said, the bhikkhu Arita, formerly of the vulture killers, sat silent, dismayed, with shoulder dropping and head down, clumb, and without response. Then, knowing this, the Blessed One told him, misguided man, you will be recognized by your own pernicious view. I shall question the bhikkhus on this matter. So Arita, bhikkhu, now knew his fault already. But anyway, Buddha want to awaken him. So he take this opportunity to question the other monks, to let Arita, bhikkhu Arita, to know clearly the Dhamma taught by the Buddha. Then the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhu thus, bhikkhus, do you understand the Dhamma taught by me? As this bhikkhu Arita, formerly of the vulture killers, thus when he misrepresents us by his wrong grasp and injures himself and store up much demerit. No, Venerable Sir, for in many discourses, the Blessed One has stated how obstructive things, means sensual pleasures, are obstructions, and how they are able to obstruct one who engages in them. When we talk about this, although just now I mentioned is this sensual pleasures refer to sexual intercourse. However, other type of sensual pleasures still obstruct the progress of a meditator. Buddha, in many discourses, Buddha said that there are five hindrances. Without getting rid of these five hindrances, one is unable to progress in the path. And these five hindrances obstruct the development of concentration and wisdom. So the first one is sensual pleasures. And this sensual pleasures not only refer to sexual intercourse, including when the eye enjoys in agreeable visible object, when the ear enjoys in agreeable sound or pleasant sound, when the nose enjoys in agreeable fragrance, and when the tongue enjoys in agreeable or pleasant taste, and when the body enjoys in agreeable or soft touch, and when the mind enjoys in various fantasies or planning and so on. All these are considered as sensual pleasures that must be given away before you can progress in the path, especially when you come to intensive retreat. So without getting rid of these five hindrances, then to move forward, to develop further concentration and wisdom is not possible. Therefore, the meaning of jhana, concentration, jhana, what's the meaning of jhana? Jhana got two meanings, Pali word jhana. The first meaning is closely contemplate. The second meaning is burn up the five hindrances. So only by burning up all the five hindrances, jhana is attained. Not to speak, give up the sexual intercourse. So the sensual pleasures here, which are the obstructions, including all the senses enjoyed through six senses, not only body, eyes also, eyes, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind too. Even though bodily you do not enjoy sensual pleasures, but if your mind keep on think of all these fantasies, is also one type of enjoying sensual pleasures. All these are obstructions that need to be given away if you want to progress in the path. Okay. So Buddha said, these all are obstructive things. And Buddha further said, bhikkhus, that one can engage in sensual pleasures without sensual desires, without perceptions of sensual desire, without thoughts of sensual desire, that is impossible. This is also a very important sentence. Why? Because some of the teacher may say that, some of the maybe lay teacher, they have family. They may say that I enjoy sensual pleasures but without desire. Some may say so. I enjoy sensual pleasures but I have no desires. This is completely opposite with what Buddha said. Opposed to what Buddha said. Buddha said because that one can engage in sensual pleasures without sensual desires, without perception of sensual desire, without thoughts of sensual desire, That is impossible. Therefore, monks are monastic. We keep away from all sensual pleasures, so that our mind can free from sensual desires. So those who are engaged in sensual desire and think they have no the mind, maybe they think body enjoy, but mind does not enjoy. That is impossible, stated by the Buddha. Okay. So why I speak this one, just to let you know how to recognize a person. If a person say he has no desire while enjoying sensual pleasures, this is not possible. Okay. So the next, the Buddha give a simile of the snake, how a person grabs wrongly the Dharma and hurt himself. Okay. So here, because some misguided men learn the Dharma, discourses, stanzas, expositions, verses, exclamations, sayings, birth stories, marvels, and answers to questions. But having learned the Dharma, they do not examine the meaning of those teaching with wisdom. Not examining the meaning of those teachings with wisdom, they do not gain a reflective acceptance of them. This is also a very important sentence. When you learn the Dharma, you must reflect. Use your wisdom to reflect it. So first we listen, then you don't have to accept it completely. Buddha never say you must listen to me completely, no. First you listen, then you reflect. Use your wisdom to reflect whether it's sensible, whether it's correct, logical, reasoning or not. But some, when they heard the Dharma, they do not accept. They do not accept the meaning of those teachings with wisdom. Not accepting the meaning of those teachings with wisdom, they do not gain a reflective acceptance of them. Instead, they learn the Dharma only for the sake of criticizing others and for winning in debates. Because this is very, this happened very often during Buddha's time. There are many sects, different sects, they program different teaching. So sometimes, his teaching is different from another sect's teaching, so they start to debate. Anyone who is defeated will become the follower of that person. So this is very common during Buddha's time. Therefore, they learn all the teaching just for the sake of debating, to win in the debate only. But I don't know now. Now I think we don't have this tendency, but still it happened in someone who learned it scholarly and start to debate without practical experience. So the Dharma, we learn the Dharma not for debating, not for criticizing other people. So if anybody who learn the Dharma just to criticize other people or to win in debate, then they do not experience the good of the sake of which they learn the Dharma. What is the good when you learn the Dharma? What is the purpose when you learn the Dharma? You all come here to learn the Dharma, right? What is the purpose? To gain insight. To gain insight and also to understand the reality and to understand yourself more and to examine yourself and finally to uproot the corruption of the mind. To learn the right path, how to walk righteously. Then finally, gradually, we can give up all the corruption of the mind, all the defilements. This is the purpose. This is the good which we learn the Dhamma. So if your motivation, your motive is correct, then you will walk correctly. So the motive is very important. But for somebody, during Buddha's time, they learn the Dhamma to criticize other people and to win in debate only. So those teachings, being wrongly grasped by them, conduce to their harm and suffering for a long time. So for those who learn the Dhamma just to criticize other people or to win debate, this will cause suffering for him for a long time, because his conceit will grow. He will become very conceited, and he start to hope for more gains. So all these are refinements of the mind that must be carried off. Then Buddha gave a simile of a snack. Suppose a man needing a snack, seeking a snack, wandering in search of a snack, saw a large snack and grasped it, its coils or its tail. The snake would turn back on him and bite his hand or his arm or one of his limbs. And because of that, he would come to death or deadly suffering. Why is that? Because of his wrong grasp of the snake. So too, here some misguided men learn the Dhamma for the sake of criticizing other people or to win in debate. So they will be bitten by the snake because they grasp the wrong place. When you want to catch the snake, which part of his body you should catch? His neck, not his tails. If you catch his tails, the snake will turn and bite you. Then you suffer deadly. So this simile of the snake shows that when you learn the Dhamma, you should grasp it properly, correctly. Don't grasp it wrongly. If you grasp it wrongly, just like you catch the snake by the tails, then the head of the snake will turn back and bite you. So this simile of the snake is very easy to understand. So those teachings, being wrongly grasped by them, will conduce to their harm and suffering for a long time. And Buddha further said, but some clansmen who learn the Dhamma, discourses and so on, and having learned the Dhamma, they examine the meaning of those teachings with wisdom. Examining the meaning of those teaching with wisdom, they gain a reflective acceptance of them. They do not learn the Dhamma for the sake of criticizing others and for winning in debates. And they experience the good of the sake, for the sake of which they learn the Dharma. Those teachings, being rightly grasped by them, conduce to their welfare and happiness for a long time. So to rightly catch the snake, we catch it by the neck. Okay. When we catch it by the neck, even though the snake may wrap its coils round our hand or our arm, still we would not come to death or deadly suffering. Therefore, Buddha said, when you understand the meaning of my statements, remember it accordingly. And when you do not understand the meaning of my statements, then ask either me about it or those bhikkhus who are wise. This is also a very important statement. Why? Because if you do not remember it accordingly, then you may forget. Or when you do not understand and yet you do not ask, then you may hold a wrong view. When you hold a wrong view, like the Bhikkhu Arita, then you will walk the path according to your wrong view. Then you suffer that day. You store up all much demerit. That's why Buddha emphasized a lot. You must understand it correctly. If not, ask. Ask wise bhikkhu who knows well. Then it can clarify your doubt and your view becomes straightforward. When your view becomes straight, then you follow the straight view, then you arrive the right destination, not the wrong destination. Therefore, in Kalama Sutta, Buddha encouraged us to ask and don't believe everything. Buddha said, even don't believe everything I say, but you put into practice and see. If after putting in the practice, you feel that your corruption of the mind, your refinements become less, your greed, hatred and delusion become less and less, then you are in the right path. If not, after practicing, your conceit become more, your greed become more, and you hope for more gain, then you know yourself, you are not in the right track. You have been sidetracked. The deformments of the mind become more, which is not correct. The path is pure. So after walking the path, you only become more and more pure. Your mind become more and more pure, not become more and more impure. So this is how you can examine yourself. So from time to time, we call mirror of the Dharma. From time to time, you examine yourself. Whether my greed become lessened, my anger become lessened, my delusion become lessened, whether my view is straight or distorted, and so on. So to make sure you walk the right path, from time to time, you have to examine your own mind, your mental state. So if you found that, your anger become greater than before, then you must check your practice. Check your practice. What type of practice that makes your anger become even more than before? Or you check your, what type of reading, what type of book you read, and so on. Or what type of talk that you read that you become more deluded, become more ignorant, and so on. So please, from time to time, you've got to examine your mind, examine your path, whether you are in the right track or not. Sometimes people get lost and yet they do not know. If you cannot find a wise teacher around you, then go to Sutta. Go to Sutta. Sutta can show you many ways how to examine yourself. Then next, Buddha give another simile of the raft, which is very, very famous in the teaching in the Theravada tradition. Bhikkhu, I shall show you how the Dharma is similar to a raft, being for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of grasping. Listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, Venerable Sir, the Bhikkhu replied. Bhikkhu, suppose a man in the course of a journey saw a great expanse of water whose near shore was dangerous and fearful and whose further shore was safe and free from fear, But there was no ferry boat or bridge going to the far shore. Then he thought, there is this great expanse of water, whose near shore is dangerous and fearful, and whose further shore is safe and free from fear. But there's no ferry boat or bridge going to the far shore. Suppose I collect grass, twigs, branches, and leaves, and bind them together into a raft, and supported by the raft, and making an effort with my hands and feet, I got safely across to the far shore. And then the man collected grass and leaves and bound them together into a raft, and supported by the raft, and making an effort with his hands and feet, he got safely across to the far shore. Then, when he had got across and had arrived at the far shore, he might think thus, "This raft has been very helpful to me. Since supported by it and making an effort with my hands and feet, I got safely across to the safe place. Then suppose I were to hoist it on my head or load it on my shoulder and then go wherever I want. Now, because what do you think? By doing so, would that man be doing what should be done with that raft?" It's stupid, right? It's very stupid. Okay. So now, Venerable Sir, Buddha asked again, by doing what would that man be doing what should be done with that raft? Here, because when that man get across and had arrived at the safety, at the safe place, he might think thus, "This raft has been very helpful to me. Since supported by it and making an effort with my hands and feet, I got safely across to the far shore. Suppose I were to haul it onto the dry land or set it adrift in the water, and then go wherever I want. Now, bhikkhus, it is by so doing that men would be doing what should be done with that raft. So I have shown you how the Dharma is similar to a raft, being for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of grasping. Bhikkhus, when you know the Dharma to be similar to a raft, you should abandon even good states. How much more so bad states?" So how can you understand? Buddha said, even the good states, keep it up. Not to speak bad states. Here when Buddha said, you should abandon even good states, not the good state itself, but the attachment to the good states. For example, what are the good states? For a meditator, maybe concentration. So when you achieve good concentration, let's say good concentration, excess concentration, the mind is very calm, then you delight in the calmness, you delight in the concentration, because it's very calm and very pleasant, enjoyable, and a lot of joy. So if you attach to this calmness, to this joy, to this pleasant state, you will not move forward. You just get stuck there. Enjoy in the concentration. You will not move forward. Therefore, Buddha said, even this good state, don't attach. Don't attach. So Buddha said, you should abandon even good states. Mean the attachment to the good state. If you attach to the good state, let's say excess concentration, then you will not gain absorption concentration, first jhana. Excess concentration is close to absorption concentration, jhana concentration. So if you only attach to the good state of excess concentration, you will never arrive at first jhana. And if you get attached to first jhana, you will not arrive at second jhana. So if you get attached to second jhana, you will not arrive at third jhana. If you get attached to third jhana, you will not arrive at fourth jhana. Therefore, you should not attach to any good state in order to move forward. This is what Buddha means. Okay. So this refers to concentration. How about vipassana? When we come to vipassana practice, we will reach a state called the inside knowledge of arising and passing away. When a person reaches this stage, he experiences a lot of light. Not only concentration produces light, the sharp insight knowledge also produces light, radiant, brilliant light. And he feels a lot of joy, pity, rapture, and a lot of extraordinary experience. So some people get stuck here because he start to attach to this pleasant experience, and he think this is the end. This is the end of the meditation, and he get stuck because of the attachment to good state. And if he gets stuck, then he will never move on to the higher inside knowledge, which is passing away. Therefore, Buddha said, here Buddha refer to the good state here, refer to good state of concentration and insight. So even such a good state you have to abandon, how much more so bad states, or the bad state of the mind. For example, greed, jealousy, competition, bossy, anger, ignorance, wrong view, enjoying sensual pleasures, and so on. Even good state you have to abandon, not to speak all this bad one. This is Buddha's admonishment. Then he said that the Dhamma, I have shown you how the Dhamma is similar to a raft, being for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of grasping. Here grasping means that some people who learn the Dhamma and try, who learn the Dhamma, for example, he study all the Nikaya, Abhidhamma, then become scholar. Then he start to debate, show off. Show off his understanding of the Dhamma without practical experience. So for such a person, then he learned the Dhamma for the purpose of grasping, not for the purpose of crossing over to the other safe place. Therefore, Buddha reminded us, admonished us, the Dhamma. We learn the Dhamma. The Dhamma is Buddha gives this simile of a raft, just to show the Dhamma is for the purpose of crossing over from this shore full of dangers to another shore free from all dangers, fear, suffering, not for the purpose of grasping. Okay, to this extent, is it understandable? Do you have any question before I proceed, or we just stop here for question and answer? Because I know Americans like to ask questions. And I also love to answer questions. Answer questions, no need to prepare. To test my talent too. So you want to stop here? to have question and answer section, or you want me to proceed? Stop. Okay, then let us stop.
Proceed.
Okay, let us take the balance. We have question and answer first. When there's no question and answer, then we proceed. Okay, so that your question will not be neglected or ignored. Okay. Any question and answer about what we have learned so far? Yes.
Are there any attachments that don't result in an increase in of negativity, like attachment to the Dhamma? Is that also something that leads one away from self-truth?
I think attachment to the Dhamma will not lead you away from ultimate truth, but you get stuck. You just get stuck. Attachment to the Dhamma is called wholesome desire. It's wholesome desire. But if you attach to it and get stuck, then you are not moving forward. You also will not fall back, fall down or going downward. You were not going downward. It's just that you are not moving forward. It's wholesome, it's called wholesome desire, chanda. Attachment to the Dhamma, we do not categorize it as unwholesome. We put it as chanda, wholesome desire.
Are there other wholesome desires like that, or is that
other wholesome desire? For example, want to become monk? It's a wholesome desire. That should be encouraged. Want to listen to more? Want to understand more the teaching of the Buddha? Want to associate with wise person? All this is a wholesome desire. That should be encouraged. Okay? Yes?
So, how does one deal with
okay, good question. Mindfulness and wisdom. You have to apply mindfulness and wisdom in your daily life so that while enjoying sensual pleasures, you are not carried away by it. So mindful. When, for example, when a greed arises in you, then mindfulness, no. Greed has arisen in me. Okay, contemplate it. Greed has arisen in me. Greed arises due to cause and effect. Because of the object impinge the senses. Because of certain object, whether it's visible object, sound, taste and so on, impinge or come to contact with the senses, then the greed is arising. So it's a cause and effect, impermanent, non-self. Then you if you can contemplate in this way, then you can block the grid. You can block the grid to become more. So you can apply it if you have mindfulness and wisdom in your daily life. This is your protector. Without this one, then I think very difficult to free. It's very difficult to you will be enjoying sensual pleasures and not knowing it, and then later on we will become more and more lustful. The mind will incline more and more for enjoyment without mindfulness and wisdom. Okay.
Two issues really stir. I always wanted a sense of family. That's something that I haven't had. And I became ill, and I spent a fair amount of time at home and unable to go out. When I'm having problems. abilities will go down.
Yes.
My wisdom is not.
It's true.
I'm not necessarily able to focus through the pain to pray and meditate. And I feel I have no purpose except perhaps finishing karma to allow a better rebirth, mm-hmm. to experience this,
mm-hmm.
To talk to other people, admonitions against idle chatter and such, or to even watch or listen to teachings. I'm using that as a comforting mechanism. Is there a way to do this? What would you suggest without accumulating demerits? I can see that if I am at home alone, no matter what I'm practicing, if I don't have the right view about it, and I'm not doing interacting with others, sensual pleasures that can even be interpreted by me right now as reading Buddhist teachings to comfort me, to distract me from what is happening right now. And would I be accumulating demerits because this was done with the wrong view?
Wrong view of what?
The wrong view. It's a way of enjoying sensual pleasures, although it's sensual pleasures, the senses, although it's not the way we usually think of it. I'm using them to comfort myself. I'm wanting to be able to hear someone. I worry about losing my hearing, my vision, the senses very much, because I already feel so cut off from people.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm home alone and hurting, some of the things I think are not developing my mind in the manner that we would like it to go. I'm not developing further wisdom or merit.
I think you are developing further merit and wisdom if you, as you say, you're reading the Buddha's text and you cut off some, not associating with people, cut off, you live in seclusion.
Because of spine damage, sometimes I'm not able to leave the house or even sit up in a chair.
It's okay. It's not necessary to meditation. It's not necessary you have to sit on a chair all the time.
Let me be very specific. I will not be able to get up. There have been times that I can't get up for days or weeks at a time, even to prepare my own meals, and I would like to just grimly everyone to stay away because I don't want to spill. I am not able to maintain a very much compassion for myself. I feel powerless. My sense of the no self, my changing body image and abilities are very difficult for me at times. I have a great deal of problem with acceptance.
Okay, before you go further, I want to share with you how to deal with the pain. Okay. To me, it's very easy. I don't know. You can try and see. I think the best way for me to deal with my physical pain is to forget my pain. How to forget my pain? For example, if I have a sickness or any ailment, then I send compassion. I forget my pain, then I say, may all beings free from the pain I now suffer. I don't focus on my own pain, but I arouse compassion for other beings who suffer the same pain like me. So I forget my pain. I only think of other people's pain. Okay? Taking my pain as object I arouse the compassion for other people. I hope everyone can free from the pain I now suffer. And every time, I think most 5 times, 6 times already, every time when I use this compassion, my sickness healed within 5 minutes, 10 minutes, some even 3 minutes. It works very well. You can try this one.
If I may ask another question, and I will say there was a time I felt, and there's a fear that this will come back, that because I couldn't focus because of the pain, pray and meditate.
Okay, I understand. But your statement already showed that the fear is not something real, okay? To me, fear is not something real. It's your own imagination. You fear of something which is not yet happened. That makes you feel exhausted. That fear kills you, not what will happen in the future. What will happen in the future, we do not know, right? But at this moment, the fear itself already kills you. This I noticed, many people have this type of anxiety, worry, fear. To me, all this are imagination. You anxious of something, you worry for something, you fear of something, which all this are not yet happened, right? If it's happened, it becomes fact already. It's not yet happened. So when they not yet happen, don't think of it. Don't think of it. Let it go. When it comes, then we face it. When they not yet come, don't think of it. But when they really happen, now we try to find a solution. That's all. Fear is a very big hindrance for many, many people. Asians, Americans, Westerners, almost everybody come to me to tell they worry this, fear of this, anxiety and anxious of this, which I think all this make your mind tired. Don't think of it.
My doctors have told me six times in the past several years to go to a hospital somewhere to die, and I do have birth defects and it's a changing condition, and I don't know, things get better, get worse.
Yes, impermanence, right, impermanence. You just have to stay with impermanence.
Day practice the entire day of mindfulness. If I'm watching a teaching on my TV so that I can see it, I have some vision problems. Is that a sensual pleasure because I'm using that to distract myself from the pain and what is happening now with a further illusion?
Okay. Okay. If that TV program is make your mind more deluded, yes. It's not the correct way.
Yes. So she's saying that when she has a lot of pain and she can't go out of the house,
yes,
she often watches teaching, Dhamma teaching.
Then it's okay. Then that's what I say. It depends on the program of that TV. If that program is healthy, help your wisdom, to deepen your wisdom, that is definitely fine. Good. You should spend whole day watching and reflect the Dhamma. Okay, then give up the fear. Okay, trust the Dhamma will protect you. Okay, any other question? No more. So we proceed. Okay.
Maybe it's a little bit about the statement about how engaging in the sensual pleasures,
mm-hmm,
is impossible without the sensual,
yes,
desire. Because obviously you experience things that are pleasurable.
Mm.
So is engage the key word, where you're hooked by them?
Yes. Engage is the key word, yes.
Mm. It's not that pleasurable, sensual pleasures still happen. You still maybe experience them as pleasure, but you don't need necessarily to label them as good or bad. Or I'm just struggling with the subtleties.
Okay, say it again. You have to make it more clear in order for me to answer you.
I'm just struggling with. Obviously, there are still things that are more centrally pleasurable than others.
For example.
Excess concentration versus anger.
This excess concentration is not sensual. It's not sensual things. That one is free from sensual.
But it's still mind. There still could be some bliss.
Yes, but that bliss, Buddha do not class it as sensual things. That is enjoying pleasant things without fault. When excess concentration, for example, when Buddha after he renounced the prince Siddhartha, Buddha formerly was prince. So when he renounced the world, he practiced self-mortification. You know, he tormented himself, not taking food until he became so thin, emaciated, and become like a skeleton. Then he lost all the strength. Then one day he feel that this is not a correct way. Because he tried to keep himself away from sensual pleasure, so he tormented his body. Then one day he realized this is not a way. Then he thought to himself. He said, many, many years ago when I was a child in the palace, I sat under a rose apple tree and I entered into first jhana. That is very pleasant, pleasurable. Why should I afraid of that? You know, why should I afraid of that that pleasurable? That pleasurable is without fault. And because of that, then he give up this self-mortification and he take some food and gain the strength and he meditate again and enter into that jhana again. So that type of pleasurable is without fault. You can enjoy. if you can achieve that concentration, you can enjoy. But after enjoying, don't attach in order to move forward. Okay? So, is it solve the problem? So you must classify clearly which type of pleasurable things is faultless, which type is with fault. Then you know which one to be avoided, which one to be pursued.
How can we not attach?
How can we not to attach to what?
Like excess concentration or any...
You contemplate the thought of it. Then you contemplate the better one. For example, when we enter into first jhana, in order to go to second jhana, we contemplate the thought of first jhana. The first jhana is very close to five hindrances. When the mind is slack, then it falls into one of the hindrances, then the first jhana will fall down. So this is its fault. So we contemplate the fault of first jhana, and we think of second jhana is much better. Then after that, we incline the mind to second jhana. Then we will not attach. Then when you achieve the second jhana, you will not attach to first jhana. This is how we do it. Okay? Okay, any other question? Okay, no more. Then we can, but we have how many minutes left?
8:30?
No, already 8:25. We start late because we start late. So do you want to continue or we stop here?
Could you comment on what you would see as the role of medicine that would maybe ease the pain which occurs? Dharma may be helpful, but an aspirin could be easily palliative, or cannabis could be palliative, or other narcotics could be palliative. Could be supplemental to the Dharma.
The drugs?
Yes.
As a replacement for a Dharma?
In addition to
or in combination, addition to it. If that drug does not make your mind mother, it's called mother. If that drug does not make your mind mother, then it's okay. But if that drug make your mind lost your awareness, that is not okay. That's why morphine, called morphine, is it? It's not encouraged because it makes the mind very blur. So many of the meditators, when they face the pain of cancer during their dying moment, most of people they reject the drugs because they want to die in a clear mind. So depend on what type of drugs. Trust the Dharma. If you practice the Dharma, Dharma will protect you. This is my confidence. So whenever I go, this words, the Dharma, I practice the Dharma will protect you. This words always follow me wherever I go. So I become fearless because of this word. The Dharma will protect you, protect me. The Dharma will take care of me. That's all. Then I think less of myself. Think more on Dharma. Okay? Yes?
When Nathan asked the question, how do you enjoy sensual pleasure without getting attached, you said with mindfulness and wisdom. And can you explain wisdom a little bit?
Okay. This, in fact, I think, I don't know, I have shared in, I think, Amitabha village already. Mindfulness, moment we call, moment to moment practice, mindfulness and wisdom. So this you can practice in your daily life. In formal meditation, you can do concentration, but in your daily life, you can practice mindfulness and wisdom. How? First, we know what is arising in the mind or in the body. Body is more easy for people because body is more gross, so easy to see what is the change, what is arising in the body. But you also can see what is arising in the mind. For example, anger. Anger, when anger arises, first mindfulness knows it. No, anger has arisen in me. Anger has arisen in me. But mindfulness alone is not enough. Now you know anger has arisen in you. So what? Right? So mindfulness alone is not enough. So what? What I want is to clear out. It's not to stay with me. But mindfulness must know it first. If mindfulness, without mindfulness, you cannot detect the anger. Then you are carried away by the anger. Then you scold people, beat people, you know, utter harsh speech and so on. So without mindfulness, sure you will commit karma, bad karma. So mindfulness, with mindfulness, you slow down. You slow down first your reaction. But slow down doesn't mean stop, right? Slow down doesn't mean stop. So in order to stop it, you use wisdom. Wisdom to contemplate. Contemplate what? When we talk about wisdom, we usually relate it to contemplate the three characteristics: anicca, impermanence; dukkha, suffering; anatta, non-self. We contemplate either one. Maybe we contemplate anger, let's say. We contemplate it as suffering. When anger arises, on the spot we feel suffering already, because it's very difficult to bear. So we can contemplate it. Oh, anger is suffering. Then further we can contemplate it as cause and effect. We investigate how the anger arises. Anger cannot arise without cause. Nothing, in the teaching of the Buddha, nothing can arise without cause, without causes. So a wise person always try to investigate what causes anger to arise. So if you can find out the cause for the anger, then you attack the cause. Don't attack the anger. Attack the cause. When you kill the cause of the anger, anger which is just an effect, right? Effect of the cause. So when you kill the causes, the effect of anger will subside, will disappear automatically. So, and when you contemplate cause and effect in this way, you also come to understand anger is not a permanent self. Anger is not a self. If we say anger is a self, now anger has passed away already. Then I must die, right? You say anger is self. So when anger passes away, I must die together with anger. But I'm still here. So this shows that anger is not a self. It's just that our wrong view grasp anger as self only. But in reality, anger is not a self. If anger is self, when anger disappears, you also must disappear together. Logic thinking. But because anger is not a self, so when anger passes away, if you think you as a self, then you're still there. You do not pass away together with anger. So when you contemplate or investigate in this way, then you realize anger is not a permanent self. Anger is not mine, it's not myself, it's not myself. And what's anger? Anger is an effect of certain causes. When that causes disappear, anger also disappears. This is called wisdom. One type of wisdom. Contemplation, investigation. Dhamma vichaya. In the seventh factor of enlightenment, bojangka. The seven factors of enlightenment, the second factor we call Dhamma vichaya. Investigation of the Dharma. This is one part of the investigation. This is not thinking, you know. This is not thinking. This is investigation. And Americans have very good investigation. I mean, compared with Asian, Americans are very good in this aspect. So it's very easy for Americans to develop wisdom. I can say that. It's just that American need more faith. American lacking faith. So if you can balance your wisdom and faith, you will be perfect. Asian, full of faith, lacking investigation. So Asian people, they listen to the teacher all the time. Yes, 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 no objections. But American, doubting. Until the end, okay, accept. But some people are still doubting. So you have to balance. In order to progress in the path, you have to balance faith and wisdom. Then once it gets balanced, you move very fast.
I have a problem relating to what you just said. Mm-hmm. I was walking my dog. And
your dog?
My dog. I left him alone. Mm-hmm. And the guy down the street was very mad, really upset with me. And he told me, you need to put the dog on the leash.
Okay.
And I became very angry. And I had, you know, harsh speech with him.
Why at that time you didn't wash your anger?
I don't understand. See, I'm now trying to what was the cause of anger? Was it because he was mad at me?
Because no, I think because I think when he get angry with you, your ego is hurt. Yes, you feel that you are offended. He is offended by you, and when he show his anger to you, and you become offended by his anger, so two of you end up quarreling with each other.
He was shouting.
Yeah. then you create very unwholesome energy within you and him, right? That's why this is called non-practitioner. Without practice, without put the Dharma into practice, end up in such misery. So next time, when such thing happen to you, don't look at other people. Look inwardly. What is my mental state now? When somebody scolded you, look inwardly. What is my mental state now? Anger? Okay. No, anger has a reason. When you know it immediately, you slow down the reaction. When you do not know it, your reaction becomes spontaneous. Because we have not been trained in mindfulness. So our reaction is spontaneous, which is very harmful to yourself, to your body, to your health, and to the other party. So use mindfulness to slow down your reaction first, and then contemplate this, investigate why the anger arises. Is because of my ego, or because you investigate yourself. Then after you finish investigating, the anger has gone already. No more anger.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. There are two.